12 minutes.
So that you're
5 minute and 2 minute warnings.
Yeah, with that.
Great. So why don't we give a start to what is the final session at APHA of all the workshops and panels. We're delighted that you're here. We're all from Massachusetts, and we're also incredibly delighted that we're here in sunny San Diego. It is actually apparently going to snow tonight in Massachusetts, and it's been sleety and rainy and gross, and I actually like cold weather, but this is really nice here, I gotta say. My name's Roxanne Reddington Wild. I'm from Action for Boston Community Development, the Anti-Poverty Community Action Agency for Boston. I'm moderating this panel. We've got a lot of great folks here who are all specialists on Massachusetts health reform, and all of us have a view from the ground, not from a view on high, but a view from the ground. What has it actually been like trying to implement, trying to put together and implement and then modify Massachusetts, at this point unique in the nation, attempt to mandate universal health, what we call health care, but is really universal health insurance for all of our adult population through an individual mandate that people have to have if they're adults over 18, health insurance. I'd like to introduce our panelists. We have first up will be Lindsay Tucker from Healthcare for All. Healthcare for All and Lindsay are essentially the advocacy organization behind the scenes that is especially responsible for drafting, consulting, modifying, and pushing through health reform in Massachusetts. Lindsay's worked on the health reform policy for the past 2 years, essentially its startup phase and its implementation phase. She has a master's degree from Harvard School of Public Health, and from that, essentially, you landed smack dab in the middle of it. After Lindsay will be Ann Rosen. She is from Community Partners. She's been involved in healthcare access for 10 years, first as an outreach worker, then as a coordinator of health access programs at Community Partners, which is a superb organization out in the western part of the state that does work actually all over the state with a brilliant listserv that I just think is one of the best things going. And Anne has managed 3 federally funded pilot projects, our sympathies to her, that were designed to create innovations in outreach, scope, and practice, and frankly, they've done it. She's also the co-author of Outreach Works, Strategies for Expanding Health Access in Communities in 2001. And Teresa Glenn at our far end is the program manager for, it's a state program, so she gets, it's long, the Office of Community Programs, Center for Healthcare Policy and Research at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, which is very tightly affiliated with our Medicaid state office in Massachusetts. She's also a member of the medical school faculty, and she oversees the MassHealth. MassHealth is Massachusetts' name for Medicaid. She oversees the MassHealth training program in partnership with MassHealth, and the outreach also oversees the outreach and enrollment grant program that currently provides program and grant management to 45 grants to community and provider organizations, and actually my organization, ABCD, is one of those that offer, and actually Healthcare for All is another one of those, that offer outreach, education, enrollment for the state-subsidized health insurance programs. She's worked for 15 years in community health education and done all sorts of stuff because she's been at this a long while. I'll be the next presenter after that, and my specialty is actually in community planning and policy, and in this particular case, I help start up some free tax preparation clinics where we now also have to ask people, do you have health insurance? We need to know this for your state tax, income tax form. And our final session, our final panel, or not panel, excuse me, essentially presentation, will be a question and answer period with you guys in the audience. And we'll have 2 folks here on the panel. We'll be essentially moderating that. Meg Kreplin who is Community Partners' executive director. She's been there for 3 years coordinating their communications and web strategy, and that's an awful lot of that superb listserv and online surveying and everything. She's worked to improve people's access to affordable, responsible, and appropriate health care in all sorts of settings for more than 10 years. Prior to being at Community Partners, she developed and directed a program at Boston Medical Center. She's worked as a director and a clinician in schools, youth programs, and community and healthcare settings. And I think the person who's at the eye of the public storm is actually our final moderator, Kate Bisego from Healthcare for All. She manages Healthcare for All's helpline for the past 3 years of essentially health reform. And frankly, that helpline is the place that I have sent many people who have come to me say, well, I hear I have to have health insurance in Massachusetts now, but I don't know if I can afford it. I'm really poor. I don't have a job. I just did this. This happened to me, et cetera. How do I find out if I qualify and what do I do? And I say, well, basically, contact Kate. So that's our lineup, and I want to go and give Lindsay Tucker, who will be presenting now on Massachusetts health reform. This is the politics and the policies.
Thank you, Roxanne. It's a great pleasure to be here today. Thank you all for coming out. It's so beautiful outside. I may have chosen the pool over this session, but I'm glad that you did not. How many of you have been to another Massachusetts session so far? This one in the back? Just one, two. Okay, so hopefully this will not be too repetitive for you at all. What I'm going to do is give you a brief overview of the background in Massachusetts before the passage of the healthcare reform law, talk about where we are today, and then walk you through how we got there. This presentation could easily be about 6 hours long, so forgive me if it is incredibly condensed, and that's why we did want to have some time at the end for question and answer period. So Massachusetts, all states are unique. Ours, I feel, is particularly unique. We have a lot of focus on politics and on healthcare that I'm not sure exists in other states. We have the highest per capita number of lobbyists per state. We also have a third of our state economy that comes from healthcare. So the insurance companies, the hospitals, pharma, and biotech. And because of that, it's a really highly charged political landscape around healthcare and health reform. We also, previous to 2006, when health reform was passed, had a number of private insurance protections in place, consumer protections in place in health insurance that allowed us to move forward with unique things like the individual mandate that you wouldn't have been able to do in other states. And finally, we also have a long history of having a safety net. It's been around for over 20 years now, and that has allowed us to do other unique reforms that we might not have been able to do without such a solid public programs net. So before health reform, we had a number of different numbers on the uninsured in Massachusetts. And the discrepancy between these accounts very much for what a lot of you have seen in the news around Massachusetts is costing too much, it's going over budget. And the budget is very much dependent on which of these numbers you choose for the number of uninsured in the state. So former Governor Romney and his administration chose this top number, 372,000, which we in the advocacy community believe was lowballed. We choose to go with the Urban Institute number of 550,000, and then the federal census was higher. And there's really good reasons for the differences in those numbers. One of them is the state survey didn't make as many phone calls back, and they only called folks in English and Spanish and didn't call cell phones. So a number of things that would tend to give you a lowball number. This is one of my favorite pictures. This was the signing of the bill. I'm sure you recognize some of these folks. Seated at the desk is former Governor Romney. We also have our senior Senator Ted Kennedy up there, our Speaker of the House, our Senate President, Secretary of Health and Human Services. And personally, the one thing that I like to point out about this is that these are all white men, in case you didn't make that association already. So that was where we were. Now a brief overview of where we are. We have a new governor. His name is Deval Patrick. He is a Democrat, which has shifted the political landscape also. We also have not just a coalition of advocacy groups, but a broader coalition that generally has been called the Healthcare Reform Coalition that includes the business community, the hospital community, and the provider community. as well as health insurers. And the personal interest at stake here is really one of the things that I think has enabled Massachusetts health reform to be successful. We have members of the business community flying all over the country to talk to their business counterparts about how well this is going. And because of that, it's really in their interest to stay at the table, stay playing in the sandbox, as we like to say, and make sure that things are moving forward. Many of you may have heard that we do have a slight funding crunch, and we had this slight funding crunch before the stock market took a turn for the worse. And so now, as with many other states, we are having some financial difficulties more broadly and then also specifically within health reform. But one of the really exciting things is we all expected some organized voices to come out around health reform, and we haven't seen that at all. There have certainly been individuals who have problems with various things, such as the individual mandate or the affordability schedule, things that I will talk about, but nothing organized that has come out. So the previous picture was one of my favorites, but this I think actually is my favorite. This is from an event last spring marking the 2-year anniversary, and you will see that the players are very different now than they were 2 years ago. Governor Patrick is the gentleman in the middle with the blue tie, and the woman who is speaking at the podium is our Secretary of Health and Human Services. And 6 months ago, we had over 300,000 people covered, and now today we have over 440,000 people covered. So it's quite remarkable just in terms of the number of folks who have moved from lack of coverage to coverage. All of that was the introduction, and now moving into some actual numbers, talk about where we are. I promise I'll be quick, Roxanne. As I was saying, we have moved 440,000 people onto the insurance rolls. We have halved our uninsured rate, and our children's uninsurance rate is the lowest also in the nation. It's 1.1%. And for those of you wonky numbers people out there, Massachusetts, our population is 2% of the federal population, and we accounted for 24% of the decrease in uninsurance in the nation. I'll let you sit with that for a second. We're really humble over here. So how did we do it? Medicaid expansions, and as Roxanne said, our Medicaid program is called MassHealth. I may use them interchangeably. We also created something called Commonwealth Care. Who's heard of Commonwealth Care? You guys are still awake. That's fabulous. So Commonwealth Care is our expanded subsidized program for adults, and some people think about it as an expansion of Medicaid, and some people think about it as a private program, and in the advocacy community, we very much think about it as right there in the middle of both. We have also made some changes to the insurance market. The biggest one is the merging of our small and our non-group markets, which has lowered insurance premiums for many in the non-group market. The framework that we have used for health and health reform in Massachusetts is the idea of shared responsibility. So we're not just looking to the government to make these changes. We're also very much looking to the business community and to the individuals to help make this happen. Finally, some increased reimbursements, both to hospitals and to docs. And then future thinking that we are starting now about quality and cost and also disparities, which maybe some of you went to that session a couple days ago. So briefly, in the early 2000s, we had a recession similar to what we're seeing now, as many of you know, and we were forced to cap some enrollment and also change some benefit structure, both around dental and eyeglasses. And one of the reasons that casework is so important and so special, and she's, by the way, in the Washington Post today, if any of you have read it. Yay, Kate.
Wow.
So, really, all of us are. It's about Massachusetts. Kate's name just happens to be mentioned. But at the helpline, we were getting all of these calls from people who were saying, I went in for a sort of normal procedure, and I woke up, and my dentures were gone. Or I was running across the street to catch the bus, and my glasses fell off, and they were broken, and I can't get dentures or glasses back because the benefit has been capped on MassHealth. And one of the first ways that Healthcare for All got involved in health reform was to say, these folks need these services back. And that was one of the very first things that happened July 1st of 2006, was to take these enrollment caps off and also to reinstate these benefits. And also exciting for a lot of the kids advocates, we expanded eligibility up to 300%, and we now have an additional 72,000 folks who are on the rolls. Commonwealth Care, thank you so much, Roxanne. Commonwealth Care is the subsidized program moving people into coverage up to 300% of the federal poverty level. Unlike Medicaid, it isn't looking at all at your health status or your parental status. It's really only looking at your income level. There are four Medicaid managed care organizations that are running this program, and it's a streamlined process of application. So you apply through our MassHealth or our Medicaid program, and if you're not eligible for MassHealth, then they look to see if you are eligible for Commonwealth Care. There's a sliding scale premium structure. So for about half the folks on it right now, it's no premium. It's premium free, and that's up to 150% of the federal poverty level. And then from 150 up to 300, it's a sliding scale. We have seen higher enrollment growth than was expected, I think in large part because there were more uninsured folks out there than we expected, and so it has been costing a little bit more. But the per member per month cost has actually been lower than was originally forecasted, and enrollment now is about 165,000 in this program. Insurance market reforms, I mentioned that we did merge our small and our non-group program together. Another really exciting thing to help get our young adults into coverage was to expand the number of years they could stay on their parents' program, up to 26 years or 2 years out of school. And employers are not any longer allowed to discriminate between management and other employees in their organization, so any health coverage that's offered has to be the same for all full-time employees. And there is something called the connector, which I'll talk about more in a second, but it's very much like Barack Obama's exchange idea, a localized place where people who need insurance can come in and then leave with insurance that's appropriate to them. And there are four types of private insurance you can get through the connector: gold, silver, bronze, and a special young adult plan, which is cheaper because it's just for the young adults. And enrollment there is about 20,000 right now. So this connector that I talked about is a new quasi-governmental state agency. It runs the insurance program, both Commonwealth Care and Commonwealth Choice. And we have seen significant new spending, but also some new revenues coming in. The cigarette tax increase that we passed over the summer should be bringing in about $150 million per year. That was a dollar increase to the state tax. And then our 1115 Medicaid waiver is just finishing up its negotiation process. We have a principled agreement, and we're just waiting for the details to be worked out there. And so far, all of it is looking really good and really exciting. In terms of federal funding, thank God, is what Roxanne just said, which I completely echo. So on the individual responsibility side of things, I just talked about, in terms of shared responsibility, what the government is doing, what the individual is doing. We do have a mandate for all adults, 18 and older. If there is a plan available to you that is affordable and creditable, you have to purchase it. So the state has created an affordability schedule based on your income. It tells you what you should be able to afford in the market. If there's nothing out there for you to afford, you do not have to purchase it. You will not be penalized by the mandate. And creditable, we are now creating something called minimum creditable coverage, which is a baseline of insurance, ensuring that you both get some preventive care and you have catastrophic care and some good important things in the middle like prescription drug coverage. And if you have a program or a plan that's available to you and you do not purchase, you are taxed through your tax forms. And there is also a slight typo in the slide. It's a 2-month grace period. So if there's some time over the course of the year where you are not covered, as long as it's less than 63 days, you are fine. Thank you, Roxanne. On the employer responsibility side, employers who are very small, 10 or fewer, they are not really affected by health reform. 11 or more are responsible for contributing a quote-unquote fair and reasonable contribution to their employee plan. We've had some recent movement on that regulation, but for the most part, it's covering 25% of your workforce or 33% of the dollar amount of the plan, and that's really for small employers now under 50, and over 50 it's a little bit greater. And employers also have to offer a Section 125 plan, which is pre-tax, so it's slightly cheaper for the employees. And this is one of the places where we've seen politically the most debate about. 5, increased reimbursements, both to hospitals and to physicians. This is the one place where, with the funding crisis, is a little bit more in flux. We do have our governor, a week or two ago now, I lose track of time, did make about $1 billion in cuts to the state budget, and there were no cuts seen to eligibility or benefits, but we did see some cuts to provider rates, and so that may affect health reform moving forward. Finally, moving into quality and cost, this phase two here, just in July, the legislature passed something called Chapter 305, which is a quality and cost bill, and in that there's lots of really good incentives for primary care and other things that should help health reform move forward. And finally, and we can certainly talk about this more in the Q&A session, there are lots of ways in which Massachusetts could be a model for the country, and also ways in which it doesn't quite work since the state did have so many pieces in place before starting. But what we like to think about is, rather than a policy blueprint, it's a really good political blueprint, the way in which the state was able to get everybody on board, have everybody at the table from the beginning, really through to implementation now, has been really exciting. And there are lots of ways in which Obama's plan looks like Massachusetts, and we're happy to talk about that more, I think, as we move forward. So thank you so much.